Well, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Bowles, and good afternoon to you all. Today, in the time which is available to me, I'd like to take you back to my childhood days. By doing so, I will, to some extent, disclose my age, and this is because of the nature of the subject that I'm going to be speaking about. When I was in what was probably known as junior school, I was required to learn and to memorize a number of concepts that are an anathema to the society in which we live today. For example, Luke chapter 6 and verse 31, where we are told to do unto others as we'd have them do unto us. This sort of idea is no longer taught. It appears to be politically incorrect, simply because it is a biblical principle. Yet, when I was a lad, this was the norm to which we were expected to live. But why, you might ask, is it so important to reminisce about something from so long ago? There is a reason, and I believe that you'll recognize this reason without me going into too much detail about it now. So here we go, from memory, something that I was expected to remember when I was just a lad. It goes like this. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I'll admit now that I have not always remembered these words, nor have I remembered them perfectly. But these words have been a source of inspiration and comfort over a period of many years. Yes, I expect that I've given away how many years have slipped away from me by now. But I believe that the time is coming, and indeed may soon be upon us, when we will need to draw heavily upon words of comfort and hope such as these. Perhaps I speak for us all when I say that none of us, especially those of us who live in the Western industrialized nations, have ever known deep, grinding, gnawing want. I certainly have not. The Lord has always provided for me. It may not always have been that which I longed for, but it was always that which I needed. It was always sufficient. Whenever I laid down my head in slumber, I have never known that fear that accompanies those who are hunted and who are hated. And I've always enjoyed life in a green and pleasant life. My life has known tranquility, that tranquility as if beside still waters. I remember as a child walking beside a small lake in Staffordshire. It was serenely peaceful, yet half the world was at war. I had never experienced the clamour and destruction of the bombing raids over this green and pleasant land that we call Britain. Even when I served in the Royal Navy, I felt as if the world was at peace with me and I with it. Then there came a time in life when for some reason the world of itself seemed to be not quite right. We began to see problems, problems which were not purely of a physical nature, and we wanted answers. There was a call to seek for something that was missing from life, and we were led into the paths of righteousness, a gift that was more precious than any that we had received previously. This was a gift of understanding and of an opening of the mind. There was a reason for this calling, even if we barely recognized it at the time. But now we see a new threat to our way of life. It is not purely the threat of terrorism, but an interference in daily life from those in authority, and a host of natural and man-made problems. It does appear that now is the time that we shall need the courage and fortitude of earlier generations who faced danger and persecution fearlessly. Indeed, in the book of Revelation, chapter 21 and verse 8, we read of something somewhat sobering. If not a chilling warning, then certainly a warning to those of us who live in this age. And to those of us who are not willing to look danger in the face, then we really must take this warning very, very seriously. Admittedly, we're not expected to deliberately place ourselves in danger. And we are told that a prudent man sees a danger and hides himself from it. But in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8, we read the following statement. There's not a great deal of room on the podium here, so I do apologise. Revelation 21 and verse 8 reads as follows. But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and the murderers and the whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. The time may soon come when we are called to walk that path that leads us through the valley of the shadow of death. And we should fear no man. We should fear no evil, regardless of its physical source or the consequences. But we must continue to have an abiding faith in God. The faith that will lead us into a deeper belief and a greater obedience to Him. And whilst I'm here, I'd just like to read a couple of snippets from news articles which I have here. And one of them is taken from a speech given by the Right Honourable David Blunkett, who was at one time our Home Secretary, a man who left his office after something of a scandal with a married woman. Now, this speech dates from the 7th of July last year. Earlier this afternoon, David Blunkett launched an astounding attack on Christians throughout the United Kingdom, announcing a new policy to criminalise incitement to hatred. The Home Secretary has implied that he wants to clamp down on the beliefs of evangelical Christians. David Blunkett has resurrected the proposed law after it was thrown out in 2001 by the House of Lords. At the time, evangelical Christians raised alarm that the incitement offence could be used to criminalise ordinary Christians for expressing their beliefs. And this is the real highlight of this particular piece. Evangelicals are Christians whose highest authority is the Bible and who hold to the historic Christian creeds. Extracts from the speech given by David Blunkett on the 7th of July 2004 read as follows. We need to be able to take on those extremists and say, I'm afraid in our society, pluralism and openness, the ability to accept differences without being subsumed, is crucial to our survival. It's what distinguishes all of us from every faith, from those who would take our lives because they reject our faith, and it applies equally from the far-right evangelical Christians to extremists in the Islamic faith. And as I say, that came from the then Home Secretary on the 7th of July last year. But perhaps what is a little bit more chilling is something from the paper on Thursday from the Scotsman, this one. And this is from the present Home Secretary. Controversial new laws to tackle international terrorism could be used to put British National Party members and animal rights activists under house arrest without criminal trial, a government advisor said yesterday. Speaking after the Home Secretary, Charles Clarke, announced new laws to control the movements of terrorist suspects, Mr. Clarke's advisor, Stephen McCabe, told the Scotsman he saw this extending to other groups suspected of using violence to further their ends. The Labour MP said, we can envisage this applying to animal rights extremists and the far right, for example. He didn't say which far right, it just said the far right, and David Blunkett referred to the far right Christian evangelicals. Part of the coronation ceremony of the kings of this country involves anointing. And we've been called to become kings and priests of a far more glorious kingdom than that of a physical empire or kingdom. If we are true and faithful and endure to the end, we will be chosen for that stupendous honour, and our cups will overflow with such blessing and joy that words will be insufficient to describe those blessings and that joy. We have a goodness and mercy to look forward to in this life now, and also for all eternity. Because as we shall see in Revelation chapter 3 verses 11 and 12, we shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is a cast iron, bankable promise. And that, as I say, this is a cast iron, bankable promise to those who are faithful and true, to those who face the coming days with hope and with courage. Revelation chapter 3 verses 11 and 12 read as follows. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar of in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name. So you see, we shall be in the temple of God for all eternity. I would like to turn now back to Psalms chapter 23 in closing. I was required to learn and to memorize these words when I was a lad. At the time, when I was a lad, I could not recognize their significance. But I think I'm learning the true significance and the meaning of them now. And so Psalm 23 reads as follows. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Eternal for ever. These are words of comfort and of courage that we need to take us through into the times of the future. And these were the words I was told to remember as a lad.